Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Ken Napsok, and we are here today to go Four Center scene by scene. Our first style, our first look at a scene up close in that Four Center style. We're going into Ray's Mirror Cave today, and this was all made possible by you on Patreon. We had a poll up there last month. This is the scene you chose out of about five choices. And don't worry, if your choice didn't quote-unquote win, you'll still have a chance. We're going to keep doing this at least once a month, and it's a lot of fun to bring you all into the process as we go Four Center scene by scene. As always, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And what book are we recommending today, Joseph?
We always try to recommend something that fits with our episode, and since we are journeying into Ray's Mirror Cave, it seems appropriate to recommend The Last Jedi novelization by Jason C. Fry. It is a good read and a good listen, so it makes sense for Audible.
Do that. Try it out now on us. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audio book. Joseph, scene by scene, this excites me. We've taken our eye to the movies, to the themes, to the characters, but now we're going to start looking at specific scenes. I'm really excited about that today.
Yeah, me too. And then just for older fans and newer fans, and really that covers anyone. So for anyone listening to this episode, we just want to do a quick review. We talked about this more on our show this last Tuesday. For years, our main show has been, we talk a little bit about our week, about our Star Wars adventures, then we talk news, then we do this big juicy main topic, and then we take audience questions. So we've kind of split that up. So on Tuesday, it'll be news and audience questions and life catch up. And then here on later in the week on Thursday, we're going to be doing these deep dive episodes, which used to basically be the main topic of the main show. So that's what this is about. Do you have anything to add to that, Ken? Did I forget anything?
No, well said. We thank you all out there for your support as we try something new. And what this also means is on Tuesday, our Star Wars life adventures can maybe even count this episode. I'm kidding, of course.
There is sometimes I do come around to talk about our Star Wars adventures. Like, well, I watched a movie and I read a book and I did 1,000 things, all for the wonders and the joys of Force Center, and still had more adventures. A friend tweeted me today because it is the PlayStation free game of the month. I'm like, have you tried that Battlefront 2? I was like, yes, I have for hours. Anyway, enough of that.
Yeah.
Shall we dive into the mirror cave?
Let's dive in and hopefully swim like Ray did, question mark.
We'll dig into that because we're going to talk about specific details, but also big picture stuff, what is going on in the scene, how we feel about the scene, and how the scene might help tell the overall story of Ray's journey in the sequel trilogy. So, Ken, let's start with a temperature taking. How did you feel about the scene when you first saw it back in 2017? Did you like it? Did you love it? Were you confused, frustrated, moved? What were your emotions?
Oh man, let's go back to 2017, right? I was at the time, I was kind of taking it in still with my quest for written answers, so to speak, like, you know, the theories, the Ray theories and all those things, you know, whether you were an active participant in them or not, they were there. So I couldn't help when this started. I think I literally kind of mumbled the words, oh, here we go. And then when the reveal happens, the hand on the mirror and she sees herself, I actually kind of giggled and thought to myself, they did that. They did it. Oh my God. That's the answer to the theory question. And I kind of went down that path. So, you know, kind of what that tells me now is I was a little more obsessed with, you know, my own thirst for trivia answers and more than the revelation of character. And I've changed a lot of my habits, at least fine tuned them, I think, and more concerned about what that meant to her and her story. So, you know, that's kind of where it was then. And I did like it. I so loved the reveal of her talking to Kylo that this scene, the sequence always stood out to me.
Yeah, you've mentioned that a couple times. That was great to keep in mind that observation that you've had, that's a power of this scene, is the way it is cut and filmed. It's not just Rey in the cave. It is the way it is narrated and presented to Kylo. So we will definitely dig into that. I take your point. That's a really good memory of The Last Jedi. I could be wrong, and I'm sure fans would be happy to correct me, but I feel like when The Last Jedi came out, it was natural to be wanting answers or further storytelling on all the things that we'd been debating about. So I think a lot of the initial reaction to Last Jedi from people who loved it, from people who didn't like it at all, was a reaction to those moments that felt like, oh, what's Luke's first words going to be? Oh, he's going to toss the lightsaber away. What will Rey discover? Oh, it's just another mirror of her. Who is Snoke? He's dead. That's who he is. So these laundry lists of responses, I think, kind of colored the way we saw the movie. And I think now that we've gotten farther away from that time, I think there's a sense that, to me, that everyone in fandom is just looking at the movie for the movie rather than that response to 2 years of fan discussion, which, you know, it was never intended to be, right? That we kind of layered that over the film, I think, in a natural way, in a way that I think a lot of us have become more cautious about.
It's part of the fun, but yeah, you just made me think of, you know, Luke's first words, right? That was like stories. Oh, there's a rumor of the first thing she says to him, right? And that was like, it was like a prop bet if you're a football betting guy or something like that. It's like a side bet of who's going to score more touchdowns today. And it was just, we all got caught up in that. There was a Spotlight Star Wars episode I did around that time, or maybe coming out of Force Awakens, where it's like, JJ has helped bring some of that Game of Thrones theory play into the story, where, ooh, what's this? What's that mean? And I don't know how much JJ intended to do that, by the way. But I don't have a regret getting caught up in it. You can roll your eyes, but Last Jedi helped change that for me, because I came out and I was like, I was looking for the wrong things. And that can sound preachy if I apologize if it does, but I just kind of came out of it like, oh, got it. Got where I was looking, you know, looking at the wrong spots.
Yeah. And I think the reason that it's good to discuss it is that I think that's a part of the reason that we really want to reexamine scenes like this. But also, for me, there's a little bit of sort of meta energy of what's going on in the Mirror Cave up to a point. For me, is Rey looking for just a simple, definitive answer of who exactly were my parents that will give me what I need in terms of figuring out my place in all this. And it's interesting that some of us in the audience were like, yeah, just tell us the answer that'll be back on the back of a Trivial Pursuit card, and that will center us in the story, you know, and that's, the journey is more complex, as we'll discuss. For myself, the first time I saw it, there was definitely some of that of like, what are these kind of big canon answers? But I also just immediately really loved the Star Wars poetry of it. I really liked how much Last Jedi did have a relationship with Empire Strikes Back, and I think to a lesser degree Attack of the Clones, but having that's very specific. Here is the poetry of a confused Force user going through into a dark side space trying to discover something, and it was very similar but very, very different at the same time, so I really liked that. I think even now, Last Jedi is a balancing act of how much of it is Rey's story, how much of it is Kylo's story, how much of it is Luke's story. Obviously, Poe and Finn have big arcs. We spent a lot of time with Rose, but this is a moment that really centers Rey's story and makes everything about Rey in this moment, and I think is key to her journey in this movie. So I always really like this scene from, this is really centering Rey's story. And then the other thing, just for beginning of this discussion, is we're going to get down into picking over every line and image like we do, and that's what makes a scene-by-scene discussion fun. But I also just want to start with that big picture perspective of, there's just something visceral and emotional about the images. You can turn your brain off and just feel a lot, subliminally almost, from just this strange image of kind of finding yourself in this dark, watery, maybe cold, maybe kind of organic space, and then you're inside a mirror, and then you won't end, and you're in rhythm with yourself, but you're also afraid. There's just, the simple images just evoke a lot, I think.
Well, it's so, man, sometimes I'm smarter than I believe. I didn't do this intentionally. Just, I put on that score only version of The Last Jedi last night, you know, just like, and when you take it down to those basics and the visuals, you know, Williams music, this scene is just as clear and just as powerful. Everything there. Everything is there. It's built into it.
No, that's really cool. I got to make time to do that, to listen to the score only version. So going into this scene in The Last Jedi, if you're a Star Wars fan who's rewatched the movies a lot, as soon as Rey is going into a dark side cave, we have the knowledge of Luke's experience in the tree cave on Dagobah. That is explicitly, that scene is about what you take in with you. So I think for Star Wars fans who've rewatched Empire Strikes Back a lot and thought about it a lot, what do you think we as an audience were taking into Rey's mirror cave scene with us because of Luke's tree cave scene?
I think this might just, again, go kind of what I was saying up top. It might have been a big giant revelation, which in a way it was, right? It was like it keeps in line with that. And going back to Empire, if you're in the theater in 1980 and you see that, you blurt out, "Oh, he's his father." I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't have the benefit of seeing that without knowing what happens. So I was really happy that they did it. That's part of it too. Just kind of knowing Empire's story, just when she starts walking up to it in that moment, I'm like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. this needs to happen. Everyone's got to go into that cave. And that's because of, you know, we'll come to Anakin's version of that too later on. But like, you know, it's Star Wars poetry, but I was excited. It made me excited.
Okay. So you were focusing a little bit on that idea that there might be a revelation, as you were saying, that's what you took from.
Definitely. That's what I took into the cave with me.
That's what you took into the cave with you. Interesting. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I love that moment in Empire Strikes Back and thinking through exactly what you were talking about is, when you watch it in retrospect, it feels like, ooh, we're setting up the revelation. And I think they certainly are. But there's also what's happening in that scene preceding with Luke and Yoda is Luke is teaching him about the difference between the dark side and the light and saying it will consume you if you use the force, for attack. And give in to quick seductive power of anger and fear, you will be consumed as Obi-Wan's apprentice. So even if the revelation wasn't there at the end of Empire Strikes Back, it would still be telling us something about Luke of you're going down the same path as this guy, as Vader. So I think for me, with not only it being like, yeah, it is absolutely the beginning of this huge canon revelation that Vader is Luke's father, but it also is still an entirely sound storytelling beat without the explicit father-son relationship. And I think the sort of bias or interpretation that I took with me as Rey went into the mirror cave from that is that the experience of going into one of these dark side caves is facing some version of your dark self, because Luke ends up, you know, facing himself in terms of the mask literally exploding and, you know, metaphorically with if he goes in with aggression, with weapons, he's only going to get aggression and weapons back. But I went in with the interpretation for myself as well that these dark side caves will show you some version of the truth, but the most painful, upsetting, possibly manipulative version of the truth.
Yep. 100%.
Yeah, and that, I think that really colors my personal interpretation of what's going on in the Mirror Cave with Rey because of what I think about Luke's Dagobah cave. So with that, we are going to dive into some of the beat-by-beat details. We are introduced to the Mirror Cave early in the film. Luke says it offers Rey something she needs. What does that say about the nature of the cave and the dark side that it is calling out to people going, hey, you want this? I know you do.
I think often what we think we need is not what we need. So not that Luke's, maybe he's having a little Obi-Wan fun of, you know, you're going to go in there and find something and because you're looking for that something. And it, like you just said, Joseph, it's a twist on it, which might come from the dark side, but in there is what you really need. So to maybe explain better, from my jumbled brain, like at this point in her journey, Rey needs to feel part of something, and the dark side plays on that. And the light side may very well be saying at this point, you need to be able to stand on your own 2 feet before you learn about your true past, anything like that. That's a loose interpretation of it. But, and that way you'll be ready for the impact of it all. That maybe that's the light side's version of it. Right. Like, and I'm saying this with knowledge now, Joseph, as of what happens. Some of this be like, hey, you're a Palpatine. That's not going to go well with you. We want you to know that that nothing idea is actually your strength and it's going to help you there. So the light side might be leading her that way. And that might be what she, quote, needs from the cave. If we're taking Luke's words, true there, but whereas the dark side is twisting the truth, like you said, trying to say, hey, you're on your own, deal with it. And that might, initially make Rey feel like she's standing on emotional quicksand. So I don't know. Often the truth and what kind of makes us an individual can be twisted, like you said, to feel like a weakness. And that's what Palpatine is hoping when he eventually does his reveal. Like, yeah, I'm your only family. You're all alone. And you go back to this cave moment and the cave kind of was saying you're on your own. If there's any light side in there, that might, or maybe the light side's on the outside of the cave going, hey, I've got the interpretation if you want to hear it. So
yeah.
I definitely factored in with episode 9 now, and that's why I think it emotionally connects for me.
Yeah, no, I think that's all great stuff, great viewpoints. For me, the idea that the dark side offers you something you need, I continue to think of the light side as calm, at peace, passive, where the light side would go like, well, here's the truth. You know, I'll set it on a table. You approach it when you want. And this idea that the dark side is basically like, hey, I got something for you. I know you want it. That is trying to pull you in with the illusion that it can give you what you need. You know, the same way Palpatine was like, oh, I know what you need, Anakin. You need to save Padme. And that's never what the dark side intended to actually offer to Anakin. You know, and to me, I feel that this rhythm of that's how the dark side works. It is honest enough to go, this is what you think you need. I'm telling you, I'm going to give it to you. And I like that there's that sort of sucker punch of the mirror cave of you think what you need is to see your parents. So I will tell you, I'm going to give you that. And then I'll give you something slightly different than that.
Right. It's going to shake you.
Yeah, yeah. So Rey is going to go into the mirror cave, of course. Let me break this down just a little bit to see what she's going in there with. So the scene immediately before the cave is a Force Connection call with Rey and Kylo. And in this call, there's a lot. Kylo tells Rey that her greatest weakness is looking for her parents in Solo Skywalker. Kylo also implies that he killed Han because Han represented the past, in the past stops you from becoming who you're meant to be. Finally, Kylo claims that Luke wanted to kill him because he feared Kylo's power, just like he does Rey's. So it's a lot of Kylo explaining himself to Rey and also trying to build these connections of we're both held back by our past. We can't be who we need to be unless we kill that past. And Han and Luke aren't going to be there for you, just like they weren't there for me. So given all that, that Kylo's saying to Rey, what do you think Rey is really taking in the cave with her?
Yeah, it's great stuff. It is a really important call. And the pain through Rey, you know, I'm so upset that he killed his father and she wants one. So I think it's, again, this feeling we know she feels alone, was alone on Jakku for so long and is afraid to move on. I always talk about how I think her routines on Jakku kept her there, you know, and she wanted to stay there. She keeps talking about needing to go back. So she was trapped there. She was trapping herself there in a way. So I think there's a search for true belonging, search for, yeah, maybe he's right. And then also, I'm glad you brought up this idea that, you know, by this time, Luke's afraid of her. She said it. Kylo's like, yep, been there, done that. Here's what's going to happen. Is she going in there to search any more on that? I don't know. But also when she comes out of it, as we'll discuss, she feels Luke isn't the one to go to. So she clearly takes some mistrust of Luke into that cave, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think what really affected me is I don't think Rey is to the point where like, oh, I understand why you killed Han. But I think she is relating to this fear that I can never move forward unless I understand my past. Because Maz tries to tell her that, right? The belonging you seek is not behind you, it's ahead. And even then, she's like, Luke? So she's, you know, I think being affected by Kylo of this idea, really reinforcing this idea of I can't move forward unless I understand my past. Mm-hmm. And Kylo's version of that was, I'm always going to be what Han and Luke and everybody wanted me to be unless I just kill them. Just they got to be gone so I can be what I'm going to be. And I don't think Rey is buying that, but I think she is buying this is going to be a weakness. This is going to hold me back from finding out what my place is if I don't have this answer about my past. And hey, I came here trying to go, okay, I will look for this belonging in the future. I'll look for Luke. He'll tell me how I fit into all this. And instead, yeah, he fears her. He doubts her. He doesn't trust the Jedi. He's maybe not telling her the full truth of his interaction with Kylo. And I think just more than anything, just that idea of he is this good parent who's like, I can't tell you about these scary adult things, but neither can you go into that dark place and look for them. That's bad too. So just sit there in your ignorance. That is powerful to me, right? I mean, not to downplay it too much or make it too real world, but you know, it is almost like, you know, a kid being curious about sex or what does beer taste like, and a parent's like, you know, I won't, don't even speak about it, don't even think about it, you know.
Right.
But this is Ray's soul, you know, that she's like, okay, maybe Kylo has a little bit of a point about not trusting Luke because he doesn't want me to know the truth, and damn it, I need to know the truth.
Yeah. 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 It's like, I don't even see her going in there as a defiance of Luke, but just setting him aside on the shelf a little bit.
Yeah. Like, if you're not going to tell me, I will go to the dark place. I'm asking you to give me what I need, and you said no, and then you judged me for leaning toward the dark because it told me it would give me what I'd need. So screw you. I'm going to the dark place, turning to the dark side, but literally exploring the darkness. Ray then, of course, heads to the cave. It is a dark hole with strange, slippery weeds. How do you feel about that aesthetic?
Maybe because I grew up on the beach and I'm used to kelp everywhere. It was okay. I know it couldn't be a cave from the outside, like Dagobah. You wouldn't want to do that direct kind of comparison. But sometimes I wish it wasn't a kelp covered hole. But once she's in there, I love the water and the cave and the looks and just that little glance of, you know, the small little exit point, so to speak, going out to the rest of the ocean out there. Really like that dark, mysterious, but it just enough, because like going back to even the first time you watch it, she walks up, you're like, okay, she's going in, and then it pulls her in, right? And you've already seen it done some weird things and called to her and dumped reverse water on her, whatever's going on up there earlier. So when it's pulled in, I remember my first reaction was like, that ain't bad. It's pretty peaceful in there. Who doesn't like, want to go in a cave with some nice water, you know, like
this is probably great. Pretty cold. I'm going to guess,
and there's a lot of, you know, again, going to my upbringing on Pismo Beach and Shell Beach and these areas in the central coast of California, you have those natural little caves in some of the cliffs, and you want to go in there and you hide and relax. And so look at what the dark side's doing. Oh, it's tough up there. But once you get in, don't worry. We got some moonlight, got a little shore, swim to shore. We got something for you here. So I really love how all that works out in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that it is both very different, but still has some specific rhythms with the cave tree on Dagobah. You know, we see Luke kind of descend into this sort of opening in the trees. But then as we follow him, there is that very kind of just circular hole in the ground that we see him poke his head in and climb down. So there's a specific relationship with that. But it is such a striking, just kind of gross and disturbing that it's this weird, you know, hole, and then the slippery vines. And I love that idea that she looks like she's going down there with purpose, but then she stands there for a second, right? Mm-hmm. And then she just kind of leans and all that, and then she slips. It's not even like pulls. It's just like, it's like what Yoda says, like, if you look into the dark side a little bit, beware that suddenly you're going to be sliding in.
I totally think that.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll get a little bit too. Don't want to make all of this sound like this is stuff that Rey shouldn't have done or that it was a mistake. Cause I think that's a part of the storytelling of this is this is a part of growing, right? That you need to face the darkness and understand it. So she slips in and then splashes into the water. We have the great Rey swimming debate. Ken, do you think Rey actually does any swimming if you watch this scene?
Look, she does look like me in the fourth grade learning to swim with a bunch of first graders. True story. So it's wonderfully awkward. Yeah. Was there a Jakku neighborhood pool? Probably not. I think there's some instinct. You kicking, and we don't see her, you know, we don't see her doing a backstroke to the shore. I think there's a little bit of a dog dropped in the bathtub. Let me get to safety. So I think she kind of swam.
Yeah, I think she instinctively kicked her legs when she plunged into the water so as to not drown. And I guess, yes, you could call that swimming. I did that in 10th grade, or not 10th grade, when I was 10 years old in Brooklyn Center. I was also thrown in a pool. I paid a professional to teach me to do that. And then I swam like Ray. And then I was taught how to actually swim. Yeah, we get into this water. Ken, you said some great things about the water. I love just the aesthetic of the water that ends up kind of continuing throughout Rey and Kylo's relationship going into their big battle on Kefbir. I would even argue that a little bit of being in this sort of snowy woods, there's everything about Rey and Kylo's relationship has this sort of this idea of water is both a flowing and organic idea, but even amniotic, thinking about being womb-like, but also as this undeniable and the destructive power, you know, the cold and drowning. And I love how much water is just used this way, because oftentimes water is depicted in films as, you know, cleansing and rebirth and floating and freeing, right? So I love that it's used here as darkness.
Yeah, totally.
So after she splashes up from the darkness, she emerges and her trademark hair, mini buns, ponytails, whatever you want to call them, are washed away. Now, is this just a, hey, it's time for Rey to have a different hairstyle? Or do you take any meaning or power from this that her the buns, ponytails that she's had are washed away and her hair is down?
I took this as a 100% on purpose then, and I take it the same. I take it like 110% now. To me, she was Force Awakens Rey when she went in there, and she's Episode 8 Rey after. Like, and it's all everything, the purpose, the drive, the direction, even the mistakes she's making are all hers going forward. And before that, there's always seeking. There's always seeking and lessons and learning and what this character goes through. But you know what I mean? Like, up until then, she is still, from Jakku, I didn't know I'd belong here. I'm here, and I don't know what to do with that. And now, right or wrong, she's got it. It's a different Rey. It's a different direction for her, or at least a direction.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I remember after the first time I saw Last Jedi, I was like, wait, when did her hair change? And I remembered really enjoying seeing that it was in this moment when she sort of said, okay, Luke's not going to help me. I'm going to go find out for myself. And that's, yeah, when this view of who she had been is washed away and she's in this moment of transition and necessary moving forward. And there's been like a visual change to her.
I like that you mentioned that, because I kind of remember wondering that too. Like, hey, whoa, when did it happen? And then you kind of go, oh yeah, the water, the wave, it all makes sense, the cave.
Yeah. Trying to understand yourself, looking into the darkness is a necessary point of transition, even to your hairstyle. So Rey approaches the mirror, which is cracked. She reaches out and transfers to being or perceiving herself inside it. For you, what is the general meaning or emotional reaction just to the visual idea of being inside a mirror?
It's a mirror and a cracked mirror, like you said. Like, that's I even went as far, Joseph, as to look up what broken dreams in broken mirrors and dreams means.
Oh, really?
I did. I shall read, sir. In general, there's probably websites with deeper writings on this, but this is a quick one. A cracked mirror can indicate that your self-image is in question. It means that you cannot connect with your own emotions. It means that you cannot connect. They repeated that sentence. So they really want to drive that home.
They are repeating in the mirror as well.
Broken mirror in a dream is a warning of coming failures and hard days for a person. And there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's great. Yeah, just for the dreamlike of the cracked mirror. For me, I think obviously it's not super deep to say a mirror is about self-examination, but I like that it could have just been she looks in the mirror, but it is like she's inside the mirror. And we've seen in many films the sort of the funhouse mirror thing, and I like this idea that she's almost transported inside it and living inside a mirror, because to me, that there was something that spoke to we were talking at the top about the dark side offering you something you need. And we're talking about exploring your dark side being necessary, but it is still the dark side. So for me, when I was thinking a lot about being inside a mirror, I was thinking about Anakin's definition of the Jedi and the Sith in Revenge of the Sith when he is discussing it with Palpatine, of the idea that the Jedi think outward and the Sith think only inward. And we know that's the story of the dark side. But I thought that seems like a great idea of the dark side to say, hey, we want to offer you a way to reflect on yourself. We want to help you on your journey. We want to give you answers, but also we kind of want you to just think only about yourself, to think only inward. And what a great visualization of thinking only inward, to be trapped inside a cracked mirror in the only thing you can see, no matter what, is you and you and you and you.
Yeah, and I like this idea, you know, going to this, you know, a poor disordered distorted self-image. You may feel a certain way about yourself that is totally untrue. I think a lot of us can deal with this through life. So again, going back to some of the stuff I keep focusing on, of Ray thinking, oh no, I'm alone versus I'm independent. You know, and so this mirror is not clear on purpose. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we talk about mirrors a lot in just culture of, like, you know, when somebody is maybe behaving poorly, and would be a normal thing to say, you know, look yourself in the mirror. And it is definitely an image of checking in with yourself and looking truthfully at yourself. But I think there is also some power in when we look into a mirror, it's this very controlled version of seeing ourselves from a specific angle. Mm-hmm. And it is not necessarily, you know, it's a very certain point of view, because looking in a mirror is not necessarily the truth of the way the rest of the world sees you from all sides moving around, you know. Yeah. It's this very specific view of yourself. And again, I like that from dark side perspective of, like, yeah, it's true and it is necessary to look at yourself, but it's not the full truth of yourself because it's your view of you.
Mm. I like what you say about it. That now you're hitting the real world stuff of what you see in that floor length mirror, wall length mirror in your room isn't exactly how the world views you. And that can go a lot of different directions, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm reflecting on some things.
Understandable. We're talking about mirrors. There should be some reflecting. So moving on, a female voice says, Ray. If you could hear it with the right sound, it comes from behind you. It's pretty great. With the story now complete, what do you take that voice to be? We can get into the, you know, ooh, who was that? Or we can talk more about the, what is meaningful that she's gone into a dark side cave looking for answers about her past and she hears a woman's voice calling out her name?
Well, clearly it was her mother. It was cut from the script, and I wish Star Wars would stick to their plans. I mean, come on. Now, here's what I think it is. I think it just might be what she wants to hear. It could be the dark side deceiving her, a sweet voice to pull her into a dark path, you know? It could be that. I know, and remember initially it was like, was that Leia? That was Leia, right? It was late. Here's a think piece on why it was Leia. It could be all that, but I don't know. I think it could be, what more would she want to hear in that moment, right? She's in there in large part to search for her parents or the knowledge of it. So the dark side kind of saying, much like I'm thinking some of the world between world stuff with Ezra and everything, just like, hey, you want a Turkish delight? Come on over here.
Yeah. You want to save your master? Yeah. And seeing your parents. Yeah, I think that's all really straightforward stuff of, she is looking for her parents. So, of course, she would hear this voice. But I enjoy that it is a woman's voice, or that it's not a man and a woman's voice with parents, because a lot of this is discussed is parental figures. A lot of Star Wars storytelling is about the relationship with the father. And even in Rey's journey, she's found potential father figures in Han Solo and in Luke Skywalker. At this point, she is only interacted briefly with Leia, and we know going forward that she's going to find a very maternal figure in Leia. But I like that this is one of the things that in this whole journey that is a reminder that there is a gendered aspect to this, that this is Rey's journey. Rey is a woman, and she's looking for both of her parents. And she's been wrestling with some of these paternal figures, with Kylo and his relationship with his paternal figures. But that there is a longing specifically for a maternal figure as well.
Yeah. I like that. I accept those terms.
I think there's also something to me that going forward to Rise of Skywalker in discussion of Rey's, Rey maybe has a little bit more memory of her parents than she is allowing herself to see, that she has more repressed memories, and enjoy watching that scene of just like, yeah, those are her, maybe some of her own repressed memories calling out to her.
Right. Yeah. Again, and yeah, that's calling out to her. It's this pool of, like you said, memories, pool of emotions, and the dark side knows which ones to pull out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So then there are a line of rays and their actions ripple. She examines her hand. She snaps her fingers. She looks up and down. What do you think the line of rays means, and what does it evoke?
Yeah, you know, look, I can understand, especially now, and I even knew some people going into 9 that said this. I can understand some wanting the line of rays to represent some sort of clone influence. There's obviously a real one-to-one kind of connection with that theory there, but that it was always too easy of an answer for me. And with what we're discussing here, it's just more in line with just the representation of many versions of herself that she can become to me, maybe some choices. Each choice she makes from this point on will kind of connect and be reflective or reflect whichever person she becomes. You know, it's this. You're looking for answers, and there's different ways to go. Not literally, but just like, that's kind of what it represents to me. She doesn't know who she is, and there's different versions of that out there.
Yeah, like almost just sort of repeating question marks, because she literally doesn't know who she is, and then here's just more of you is the answer.
Yeah, and it's a cool visual and everything, and I love when I see a lot of the cosplayers doing that. You know, a bunch of rays in a line snapping. It's great. See my parents. I love it. But yeah, to me, it just could be a little bit of different possibilities here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what I really like about it is this, for me, especially with the knowledge of Rise of Skywalker, is where the dark side cave gets to telling her things that can be interpreted as truthful, but are also, hopefully, I think from the dark side's perspective, painful and might break her and lead her further down the path of the dark side. I think the image of her all by herself speaks to her history on Jakku of self-reliance. She's had to grow strong, and she's had to rely on herself and only herself. And moving forward to Rise of Skywalker, we get a story where, yes, her story involves her connection to other people, and I think Rise of Skywalker is a story of how nobody is truly alone and everybody needs people. But then within that, for Rey, it is also a story of self-determination. She gets to choose who she wants to be ultimately. So on the one hand, it's this image of truth of,
right,
you can, you sometimes you are all you need. Maybe you can go forward with your own choices, and maybe you don't need all these answers. But then it's also in that moment, it's so fearful for her, because what she's looking for is belonging. So to say, hey, the dark side mirror cave, I would like answers about where I belong. Okay, here's just a bunch of pictures of you, is obviously stressful and potentially traumatic.
Just so not clear, you know?
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah. And then I really, that there's something just very haunting about that rhythmic, the snapping and the turning and the hand. And I think there's also something I like about that it does feel flowing and organic. And maybe there is a little bit of truth to that even the dark side allows you to be flowing and organic and like water. But that's, again, not the whole truth. So even that little bit of like, I feel like I'm in control of the situation is potentially deceptive. Do you think this is the mirror cave shtick? Do you think everybody who goes down there sees repeating images of themselves? Or do you think that was a Rey special?
Ooh, great question. I like to think of it's Rey special, Rey specific. You know, maybe if someone, I don't know, if someone needs to go down there and feel like they're a hero, it might just be the Force going, yes, you are. you're the dark side hero and it's just you. It's only you. Your path is right. You know, playing upon different desires and needs, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know. If it does.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure if you were reaching into the mirror cave of your soul. Or, yeah. I think there's something powerful about it being a mirror cave that would make you think like, oh yeah, it's going to mess with everybody in kind of the same way. But I do like the idea that it could pull you in and show you lots of different hurtful partial truths. On the note of partial truths, let's take a quick break and then we will look at the second half of Ray's journey into the mirror cave.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Hey, 4Center fans, don't forget 4Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4Center on YouTube. Check it out.
And we are heading back into Ray's Mirror Cave. So, Ken, you got a little extra fancy setup. So we're entering the part of Ray's journey where she begins narrating her experience. So why don't you go ahead and play what Ray is beginning to narrate?
Roll the clip.
I should have felt trapped or panicked, but I didn't. This didn't go on forever. I knew it was leading somewhere. That at the end, it would show me what I came to see.
So there we go.
Yeah, it's great to hear it in Ray's voice herself and put us back in that emotional space. Why do you think Ray doesn't feel trapped or panicked when she is in that line of herself? I mean, she says this didn't go on forever and she knew that it was leading somewhere, but why do you think she feels that way? Why do you think she feels that almost control?
Because there's some competing visuals with this statement here. She balls up her fist in a way. Now, I'm not saying she's going in for a fight, but it's very clear, right? She goes from kind of open and snapping and this to she balls up that fist. So maybe she's not as, maybe she's lying to herself a little bit here. I don't know. I also think, I'm not going to say everything was a dark side trick, but she felt this is where she needed to be. So I think she was smart enough to realize this is going to lead me. What I'm seeing has purpose and I'm going for it. I still think she's not seeing it all clearly because we know her true desires, maybe not truly in line with what she needs to hear or what she needs to believe. But I don't know. I keep going to the fact that, I wasn't trapped or panicked. I'm balling up my fist because I'm tense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to me it goes to, I guess I have a couple different thoughts about it. And I don't think for me either need to be like exclusively true because things can be more than one thing. I like the idea that she is a strong and reliant person and there is a power in, hey, I have been told by Luke to stay away from here, but I need to face my own darkness and I am choosing this and I want to be here and I'm doing it so that there is like a little bit of strength really in resolution and I'm going to face the darkness and I'm going to find the answers. That goes to some of this sort of positive storytelling of myths of you have to face your dark self, you have to power through and find the answer. So there's that going on. And I also think that with the balling up the fist, which I'm so glad you mentioned, you can look at it a little bit too as the pull of the dark side, that the dark side wants you to believe that letting a positive forward determination lean into anger is the way to get things done.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's directly to Yoda saying to Luke, you know, your weapons, you know, you want to need them, but it's just a real, it's there. It's right in front of your face. The balling up of the fist. So
yeah,
not a very open gesture.
No, there's a big difference there. So she reaches out to the mirror and we're not going to play this clip because it's super long, but terribly beautiful. She says, let me see them. My parents, please. And she is at that point, she's had this resolution that she's going to find the answer. This is leading somewhere. She's going to get what she came to see. But at this point, she is literally the word please, begging the dark side for what she needs. Does begging the dark side for what you need ever work out for any of our characters in Star Wars?
No. Again, it's going to give you a distorted version of the truth, right? And influence your decisions. I think, again, not everything is a direct comparison, but it's that part of that poetry is it rhymes and it feels the same. I think of Luke rushing off to face Vader early on Dagobah, right? Like he gets this vision. It's not wrong, but it's not right. At least the, you know, and so it influences his decision. And Yoda's, you know, we talked about the connection to Attack of the Clones of Yoda having a part in launching the Clone War. And that's not even wrong all the way, but it's like value what they fight for and everything. So I think there's to me a little bit of kind of connection to what Rey's seeing here or wants, begging the dark side for that answer. I'm feeling things, see things, give me the direction I need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it just has this great, rhythm with, this is what happens when you face the dark side. I guess what I respond to is this, there's so much about the scene that it feels totally unique to Rey and Rey's journey. But then within Star Wars storytelling, part of the reason I like the poetry is the nature of the dark side and the nature of the light side, that's the force throughout all these stories. And then they become unique as different unique characters experience them. But her saying, okay, I'm going to go down there. I'm going to figure this out for myself. And ending up at a point going, please just give me what I think I need. That really strikes a chord for me with Anakin saying, yes, I will do anything for the dark side. Please just give me what I think I need, which is some magical power to save Padme, really, but please give me some magical power so I don't have to feel pain and loss. Like that was never going to be the way to save Padme if that's truly, truly what he wanted. What he wanted is to not feel that pain, you know, of loss ever again and fulfill that promise that he made to himself of I won't let anybody I love ever die. And this is obviously, you know, a much smaller version of that, but it does feel like Rey just saying, okay, I believe you, dark side, just give me what I think I need, and it's not actually what she needs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like that begging moment. So then we get to the big reveal moment where a couple big reveal moments where two shadows approach from the other side of the mirror and they merge into one shadow and reveal themselves to be Rey. And she collapses to her knees. What do you think the truth of that image is, that Rey was begging to see her parents, two shadows merged, became Rey? What's the truth of that image and why is it devastating to Rey?
So this goes back to some of the stuff I was touching upon earlier and connecting it to Nine. So this the truth might be that she is who she is, right? So in this moment, it means I'm just myself, and how horrible is that? So to overcome that, she has to find that power in being on her own and become part of the bigger story. But then when you play that out into Nine, the dark side is telling her, guess what? You are you. And wow, wait till you find out who you really are. And that's gonna suck, right? And once you do, you're alone. So I connect these kind of emotional threads here of it was telling her, like, oh, you don't need to know your parents. It's you. You're the one. No, you don't have them. They're not here. And you're alone to face this. And I gotta tell you, ooh, I'm not even gonna tell you what's coming. I just keep going back to that kind of stuff, and that's devastating because I'm even going to us as fans. To me, in the theater, the first time, Joseph, I'm sitting there going, uh oh, two shadows. It's gonna be Han and Leia. It's gonna be Talon Card and Mara Jade. And then it was her, and I did the giggle, like, oh my god, they did it. And I was even kind of laughing because I knew. Even some of the videos I'd been asked to be a part of were now void, you know, and that could be devastating to some people. It was devastating to a lot of fans. Right. So I think it's a little meta there too. Not that to suggest they were playing with the idea that, oh, we know you have your theories, but that connects for me for Rey. She's fallen to her knees. Like, oh, that wasn't the answer I wanted.
Yeah.
Not what I needed. And I think that's why it's devastating.
Yeah, yeah, no, and I take your point. I think that is one of the most culturally fascinating things about Last Jedi is I don't think it was a, you know, Rian Johnson wrote this long before anybody made any videos, right? But it did. It felt that way that we were in lockstep with Rey of, you know, let me see them, let me see them, let me see if I was right about my theory, my theory, my theory. And so like, nope. And my opinion, that was never the intention of Rian Johnson, because this makes perfect sense for Rey's journey. For me, I hadn't really thought about how the two shadows kind of merge together. So in a way, again, it has this sort of dark side. From a certain point of view, two shadows come together and then you're there. That's all of our truths, biologically, up to a point.
Yeah.
But I think that idea, and we're going to play that next clip in just a moment, and Rey herself talks about this, but that idea that the dark side said, hey, come down here and I will show you what you need. And what you think you need is this simple, direct answer of who your parents are. Instead, I'll show you this complex answer that's not the answer that you are actually looking for, that you actually need. You're trying to figure out who you are by figuring out your parents. So in a way, I'm showing you something truthful. Here's you. And going forward to Rise of Skywalker, she eventually does cut through all of the noise and opinions from other people about who she should be and makes choices for herself. But in that moment where she is continuing the thread from Force Awakens of, I want my parents to come home. I want to have this belonging in front of me. To the beginning of Last Jedi, I need someone to show me my place in all this, that it is devastating to be shown. Here's your answer is, from her perspective in the moment, a non-answer.
Yep.
It's just you. You're alone. You don't have any belonging. You don't have any place in the story. You're just some scavenger staring in a mirror.
She's got a lot of evidence along the way to back that up, right? She's going to pull those files out and be like, yep, evidence, proof. Yep, this is right.
Yeah. So I think it is great because it is both truthful, but telling her the truth in the most hurtful way to make her hopefully continue down the dark side path. Because, why else would a dark side cave, in my interpretation, call out? It wants to get you to help feed the dark side, It wants you to continue to be in pain and fear so you will lash out in anger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we get, I would say, the second biggest revelation, or maybe the biggest, Ken, it's one you talk a lot about, that we realize that she is narrating this. She is warming herself by the fire, and in a moment we're going to realize that she is speaking to Kylo. But first, let's take a listen to this clip of what she says.
I thought I'd find answers here. I was wrong. I'd never felt so alone.
And then we get the reveal that it is Kylo she is speaking to. And you, Ken, in the theater, you've said before, you were expecting her to be talking to Luke.
I fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker. I was like, oh, yeah, she's gone back to Luke to apologize. You were right, Master Luke. Thanks for the lesson. And I don't know if I should have been more... I fell for it, which is part of what they're not trying to trick me, but it's just, your mind goes there. She's Rey and it's Luke, even though they've already got the connections and everything. But this is such a sweet, I don't know if sweet, but it's a tender, it's a real intimate moment, right?
And yeah.
Real, real just exposing of raw emotions. And when it's revealed, when he says those words, I did that like, oh, kind of a, God, that's great. Loved it. Loved the choice.
Yeah. No, I think you're really picking up on something of that is the tension of Rey's experience on Octo, is she is explicitly saying, I need help figuring myself out. I need help finding my place in this. And Luke is too busy working through his own issues to really hear that and respond to that. So is she going to turn somewhere else for that? And this is the moment where the answer is, yep, she is. She is going to speak to Kylo and or Ben, maybe. So why do you think she opens up to Kylo? What about her experience in the mirror cave drove her closer to Kylo?
I don't think it's just necessarily, again, a dark side trick. I think because she senses she's connected, again, going back to Force Awakens, the dual interrogation scene, their minds are kind of not, even if it's not technically bridged like Snoke claims, like in that moment, they see each other. So she sees the truth in Kylo. And so it all makes sense. This is why Ben Solo/Kylo was so just intriguing to so many of us. Like, it's a real moment. I don't think it is a dark side moment. I think she feels that real connection to him. And I think he feels it too, whether or not it's in his mind, he's playing it out a little different than hers. Again, you know, we could join up and destroy and rule is probably part of what he's going through too. But I think it's a great, powerful moment for her, but I think it's great insight into what is actually going on in Ben Kylo at the time too. She's seeing what's there. It's a connection. I don't know. He's still manipulative. He's still Kylo. Make no mistake.
Yeah, no. I think that's a great point. Of this is where she sees him. You know, begins to see him as Ben, and begins to have empathy for him. Is in this general part of the film, and you know, we're going to get to the vision that they have of one another. But I think that it is important that he is. He's still dancing with the dark side, and he does say manipulative things. But there's also this Ben side of him that is pulled to the light and who is really alone, and did feel he didn't make good choices based on it, but he did feel rejected by Han. He did feel disappointed by Luke. And the idea that somebody else could be in his same spot of not knowing where they truly belong and being doubted by Luke, of like, of course he would want to connect to that person and not feel, you know, as alone.
Yeah.
So I totally take your point that yes, Kylo is manipulative, but it's not to me, it's not all manipulation in this moment. It is an honest desire to not be alone.
Yeah. And follow me here a little bit too. There's some power going back to Rey's side. The previous scene is the topless Kylo scene and that force call. But those revelations that you and I talked about up top, there is, I don't know, I'm drawing this weird compare. I've just been doing some studying on Jon Snow on the Game of Thrones side, where when he's going up to the wall, the only one who's told him the truth is Tyrion, who he doesn't like, right? Who he doesn't trust. Tyrion's the only one like, hey, let me tell you this. So when he starts to learn it and feel it, there's a bit of a connection that grows. Ben and Maz is speaking in, you know, vague prophecies, or they, you know, Han's dead, but even Han was gruff. You know, Ben's the only one, or Kylo has told her something that maybe has a ring of truth. And so suddenly there's even more of a, all right, maybe there's something about this cat that I need to look at closer. If that, yeah, makes, you know.
No, that makes perfect sense. I really like the never implying that Rey is agreeing with Kylo, but I think there is that a bit of understanding of, oh, I'm experiencing a little bit of something that he did, where I needed guidance. I didn't get it from Luke, so I explored the dark side for answers. And if I try to talk to Luke about that experience, he'll just be upset with me for exploring it at all. Right. Here you are, somebody who has explored the dark side for answers. I don't agree with anything you've done, but you've explored it for answers. So I at least can talk to you about exploring the dark side, whereas I cannot speak to Luke about it.
Exactly. And it's not necessarily a failure on Luke's part. It's he's going through some stuff, we know.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, hey, Obi-Wan and Yoda sometimes played around with what they said to him over the years, right? But so I don't look at it as a failure as Luke, but part of what he's going through and collateral damage a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to spend too much time away from Rey, but I do like the story that emerges for me in Last Jedi is Luke just wants to fast forward Rey to everything he's learned and doesn't want to watch her go through these steps that he went through. And I think, you know, that's in this moment where he is letting her down and what he fixes later. What do you think the power of Rey choosing to share her experience with anyone at all is in the power of us as an audience seeing it?
I think it's powerful from where she's come from. The opening up of her heart is a an important thing that needs to happen down the line. It's not to take any away of her independence and her strength in being on her own. She's had for years, but you know, I'm just going, it's almost a real world thing. Like, you to be able to process your feelings, to share the experience. And then that makes you, the connection grows stronger. So it's important to the story too. The Kylo and Rey connection starts to really, really kick into high gear here. So, but I look at, I don't want to say I'm proud of Rey here cause it's Kylo, but you know what I mean? Like, it's the hardest thing for us humans or Abdenettos to do, to share, to talk,
yeah,
to grow, to question, to challenge. That's hard. That's hard for us. Hard for me every day. So in a weird way, I don't know if this is intentional for question, Joseph, but in a weird way, I'm just like, I'm proud. Like, yes, this is part of development connections. You might have connected with the wrong person at the wrong time. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know. How important is this to Kylo Ben's journey? We don't know.
Yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I know that's not maybe not the direct spirit of that question, but that's kind of where my heart goes to.
No, it really is. I mean, the spirit of the question is open ended. But everything that you said is really powerful for me about why I like it, because it's got this slightly different tone. If we look at in terms of Star Wars poetry, if you look at Luke's cave tree journey, we don't know how much exactly he discussed it with Yoda. It sort of implied in the film that they did, because Yoda says, "Remember your failure at the cave," and Luke just says, "But I've learned so much since then." So we don't get on film any sense of how much Luke has truly internalized those lessons, or if it was just like, "I took the cave test and Yoda gave me an F," you know, but now I'm better at moving rocks. Like, we don't know. Yeah. From the film, because it seems like he learns those lessons more from his experience with Vader. And then we'll talk more about some of what we perceive Anakin's cave moment or moments to be. But we see Anakin open up to Padme, but we see him just kind of venting pain and anger and sadness. And to me, this is different because it is Rey sitting down with another person and honestly processing her feeling, not just what the experience was, but how she feels about the experience. And I think that dovetails beautifully with what you were saying. And part of the reason that I wanted to highlight that this is different, I think it's sometimes something that in our society can be coded as masculine versus feminine, how much you bottle up emotions versus how much you are willing to be open and talk about them. And I am not saying that that is masculine and feminine. I'm saying, I think in society it has been coded that way. I don't want it personally to be a binary. But I think that there is a power in seeing, I went through something traumatic, and instead of just bottling it up, I reached out to the person that I thought would listen and would, and help me process what I went through.
Yeah. And then, sorry, I was going to go down a very real world discussion. Yeah. And that's why this, you mentioned something about Kylo's journey. I think this is an important moment for him. There's a lot to go and still change. And he's clouded. I think there's a little bit of a foundation here for his redemption in this moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cause I think the same goes for him, that there is a power in actually being able to, you know, I don't think he's having heart to hearts with Snoke about how he truly feels. Snoke is another parent for him to either please or anger, you know?
Yeah.
And this is an opportunity for him to also be able to open up and let even the possibility of that call to the light open up inside him a little bit. Yeah. So we get on to the very intimate part of the scene where Rey and Kylo intimately touch fingers and they both see something. I believe that they're seeing into one another's minds as opposed to necessarily seeing into the cosmic force. Mm-hmm. And Rey sees Kylo's desire to free himself of this parental figure of Snoke. And I believe Kylo sees what Rey knows but has repressed about her parents, that they left her on Jakku on purpose, but she doesn't have full memories or understanding of why. So that's a little bit of my theory of what's going on in there. Does that track with you? Do you have other thoughts?
No, it tracks because of some of the stuff she immediately then says with Luke. And then also when Kylo, I'm trying to think of the exact moment. I just watched the throne room even with dialogue and the score version. I'm paraphrasing, but you know, I saw the answer. I saw the truth, and it's in you. It's there. You know, why are you lying? Tell me. You say it. Like, he's got that kind of vibe. So yeah, I think you go back to this. I don't think Snoke's ever in from Force Awakens to now been like, hey, let me tell you something. I can't tell you all of it. Okay. But let me tell you a little bit. I don't think that conversation happened at all. So I think it tracks back to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, for me, one of the reasons that some of their scenes in Rise of Skywalker work great with what's in The Last Jedi, because in Rise of Skywalker, Kylo says, you know, I can't remember exactly how he phrased it. I've seen inside your mind, which we know. We saw that in Force Awakens. They had this connection. Snoke claims to have bridged their minds, but also with the more information of a dyad, there is this powerful connection between the two of them anyway. And it makes sense to me that when they touch, it's different to me than Jedi or Palpatine meditating and seeing all the different permutations of the future. This is a real intimate scene into one another, and they both see a truth. And it makes sense to me that he senses that Rey knows her parents left her, and maybe even the, you know, for drinking money. Maybe that's even, you know, this unburied fear or this buried fear in Rey's mind specifically that Kylo is pulling out in this moment.
Yeah.
Cool. So any other thoughts about that finger touching intimacy moment?
I'll tell you what, I think we've maybe made a joke like this before. It's the closest to like a Star Wars love scene.
Yeah.
Sex scene, if you will, only because it's such a rare, true intimate. It is, you know, and at the time you're like, wait, are they cousins? Have we learned this yet? I don't know. You know, like those thoughts, and hey, it is Star Wars, you know? But going back now, it is a true intimacy beyond even physical. And I think it's shot in that way, the fire, the light. And I'm not saying it's shot sexy. Don't anyone misinterpret it. But I look at this as like, this is two people connecting on a level we've never seen in Star Wars before. And that's why I love this whole sequence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Rian Johnson has said that it's the closest you get to a sex scene. I could be misremembering. But yeah, and also with Rise of Skywalker, you know, the idea of they actually touched, they have this connection. Mm-hmm. That the physical world is can bend to the depth of their connection in the Force makes it even more powerful for me. So going just a little bit beyond this mirror cave to sort of its consequences. So very quickly after this, Rey leaves the island. She has the fight with Luke, and Luke tells his final version of the night that Kylo destroyed the temple. And Rey is leaving the island explicitly to turn Kylo back to Ben. She's obviously affected by the vision that she's had of Kylo turning against Snoke. But do you think her choice to leave and to try to turn Ben is affected by her experience in the cave as well?
Yeah, I think there's some fear driving it, and that revelation we keep talking about. I felt so alone. Well, then here's, you know, Kylo at the campfire saying, you're not, I'm here, I got you. And like you said, she sees a truth. There is a truth in there. He did want to free himself of Snoke, right? He did want to do those things. And maybe she sees even the light side version of that. But she sees something that's true. So I think those two things add up. Oh, God, I just was shown I was alone. I don't want to be alone. This guy says I'm not alone. And if I can go change him, and I'm not saying that in a real world, I can change the partner thing. I'm just saying that in a Star Wars big emotional sense, I can go change him. Then that thing in the cave that I was afraid of is not true. Let me go do it. And some of the stuff she says to Luke isn't wrong, right? He still has a choice. That's not wrong that she says to Luke. It's just all that stuff plays out differently. You know, when you get out ahead, when you're not listening to the light side, you're not connecting to the Force, you're putting in your own fears. And what's fear's the first step on a lot of bad things, right? Yoda keeps telling us that all the time. So that's what I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've just in looking at Rey's overall journey and her journey in The Last Jedi, been really affected by the moment before she leaves, because she offers that lightsaber to Luke one more time and he's not going to take it. And then she's going to turn Kylo and help him become Ben again because she believes in him, which to your point is not entirely a bad thing. But it's also because this idea of if he could be turned, that will turn the tide of the war. Like this explicit mission that Leia sent me on, what all of this has been about for me is, you know, find the Jedi who can stand up to the First Order and save the galaxy from this horror. And I thought that was going to be you, Luke. Then I thought you'd at least help me find my place in this. You've said no to the lightsaber twice now. I'm basically going to go give it to Ben, and he can be the one to be the future of the Jedi and to be the shield against the darkness of the First Order, which to me is that relates to her cave experience because it broke her down. It told her that she was just her and therefore not important. She doesn't have a place in the story. And I think that the end of her arc up to a point in Last Jedi is when she finally does take that lightsaber back from Kylo. And I think finally decides, I don't have to give it to Luke. I don't have to give it to Kylo or Ben. I have the power. I have the choice. I can and should be that person that I think the galaxy needs.
Right. False. We have everything we need.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And I think the cave is important in that because it is making her doubt herself.
Right.
So moving on from the kind of beat by beat analysis, we're going to look at some big picture stuff as we begin to wrap up. So a big question that I think is on a lot of people's mind looking back on this scene is how does all of Rey's Mirror Cave experience work with the revelation of her Palpatine lineage and the rise of Skywalker? So for you, Ken, how does it work?
Well, I'll start here. When we knew this was going to kind of be the poll winner, I had a little slight fear of like, man, I hope it connects. Right. And you don't want to have that guy jig, because then, you know, that's when we get accused of connecting to things that aren't there. And I got to tell you, it's powerful. It's there. And I know, you know, from the outside looking in, you can say, well, when Ryan wrote it, that wasn't there. But that's what I think when they approached the writing of Rise of Skywalker and the planning and production of Rise of Skywalker, they found the places they could play with and connect things and the shadows that where they had a little more room than other places, you know, and they found it. And so when we really dove in the stuff I'm saying up top, I think it is follow the dark side here, man. You are alone. You are who you think you are, and you're going to find out who that is. And that's going to knock you out of your shoes and onto your butt. You're not going to know because stand by Rey. You don't even know. And how she stands up to that is, as you keep wonderfully saying, Joseph, making the choice, celebrating not her being alone, but, you know, having connection with the friends, all that stuff, but her independence and choosing and everyone else around her throwing, hey, join me, be this. And she opens herself up to her own path there. And that might, so it long story short, it, the emotional canon we always talk about is there. It's there. Yeah. If you follow it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I really agree with that. I really like that sentiment. I think, yes, absolutely. When you just saw The Last Jedi and she saw only herself and the revelation was she doesn't have any big lineage. Yes. Then it definitely feels like this specific rhythm with Luke on Dagobah of, you know, he sees himself in Vader's helmet and then realizes he is of that lineage. And I think that was a valid interpretation, maybe even the intention at the time. But I feel like it does still really work with Rise of Skywalker because of a lot of things that you were saying. But I really like that the escalation of fear is I have no place in this story to I am afraid of the exact horrible place that I have in this story. And that Rise of Skywalker, her fear escalates to fear that she won't be able to handle this power that she has and she will accidentally slip into using it to cause harm to the people that she loves. Don't need to go down the laundry list of ways that Rise of Skywalker support that because they're all right there. But I think if you'll go with me here for a second, in Last Jedi, she goes into the cave if the cave is indeed like the one on Dagobah, the only thing in there is what you take with it. She goes in with that fear that she has no place and that she's alone. And that's what the cave reflects. And my mind goes to, well, what would the cave show her if she returned, when she returned to Octo, if she went back down there? And in a way, it's addressed in Rise of Skywalker when she is affected by going into Palpatine's vault. What does she see? She sees a dark side version of herself when she literally goes to Octo in Rise of Skywalker, and Luke asks her, what are you most afraid of? She doesn't say Palpatine. She says myself. And that has this great rhythm that what's been going on with her for her entire journey, there's been different permutations of it, but it's been this question of, who am I? How am I going to define myself? Who am I going to choose to be? So the fact that in Last Jedi, she went into that mirror cave and she saw basically only herself. And then when she returns and asks to examine herself honestly by Luke, she's still wrestling with me. Who am I?
Yeah.
And that to me makes the cave scene really have some rhythm with Rise of Skywalker and the rest of Rey's journey.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's there.
Nice. So we're going to move on to, we've talked a little bit about the poetry with Luke's cave tree on Dagobah. Do you think that the amount of poetry is too much, too little, just right? What are your feelings on it?
I'll take the porridge right in the middle. It's just right. No, because it's similar. It's enough to let you know as a viewer, oh, here we go. She's having this moment. It's tied to big myth ideas too. So, but it's different, right? The revelation is different. You just kind of said it a little second ago in a real direct form. In our minds, Luke goes in there. He discovers he's Vader. Now we didn't know that, but we all know that now. So the answer is here, and it's not, it's different. I mean, it's there. The answer's sort of there, but you know what I mean? But it's like, so we went two different directions with it as a fan base. And that shows me that there's enough room in both these caves to be unique, but also have the same purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And you said it so well, I got nothing to add. So I'm going to move on to our next, idea. So this is an opinion. Feel free to agree, disagree. You look at Luke's cave moment in Empire Strikes Back and Rey's in The Last Jedi. I feel that in Attack of the Clones, it's not literal. Anakin is not literally going into any sort of dark side cave. But I feel like his cave moment is finding Shmi in the Tusken camp and reacting. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, look, literal cave, no. But a cave-like kind of dwelling, right? Dark. Disturbing. You can't see everything clear in there. And there's some things that are very clear. Shmi is suffering and dying, and it plays on his greatest fear. What does he take into that Tusken Raider dwelling? He takes the fear of losing her and you said it so well earlier. It's not this attachment of, I want Padme to be alive. It is attachment of, I know I can't deal with it and I don't want to deal with it. So that's what he's taking in there. And that's what he finds. That's what he finds. And look what he does with it.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was thinking through it, I really liked seeing that way because of everything you're talking about. It has this mythic sense, very Joseph Campbell, all those kind of discussions of a descent into a dark and horrible place, have to face something truly awful. In all three cases, some version of parents is involved. In Attack of the Clones, it is literally Anakin finding his mother in Empire Strikes Back. It's Luke's connection with his father, even though he doesn't know that at that point, and his potential to follow that path. And then Rey, it's an explicit, you know, this is a place that's going to show me my parents. So the fact that it's all about that, who am I going to be in relationship to my parents, gives it this great rhythm. And then that exactly what you're saying, that he's has to face this fear of loss, and arguably he does not pass that test by lashing out in revenge.
Anakin, no.
Yeah, where was Qui-Gon? Where was Qui-Gon when everybody else was having their cave moments? So if the cave represents the need to face your dark self, what ultimately, to kind of wrap up our discussion of the mirror cave itself, what does Rey face in the mirror cave? If Luke is facing a tendency towards aggression and leading with weapons and attack, and Anakin is facing a fear of loss, what do you think Rey is fundamentally facing?
I think she's fundamentally facing what you led to, what we eventually see is her place in this story and how she feels she doesn't belong. And understandably offers the lightsaber to all these people, right? That's kind of the lit, and then she eventually takes it, right? So I think that's what it is. I have no place in the story is something that happens, is said to her a lot, or says or expresses in some way. And the cave kind of said, yep, you got no place. You're alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Luke says the positive version of that, of, you know, a thousand generations live in you now, but this is your fight. You
know? Yes.
Yeah. Great stuff. Great stuff. So when we were going to do this as part of an overall Force Center main show, the way we normally did, I had a last question that was a little heavy. So I'm going to ask you to answer both seriously and in a fun way so we don't end on a downer. So if you had to face your dark self in a cave, what do you think might see? Serious answer, joke answer.
Well, my friend, I think it's all in the same for me. If you follow my brand of self-loathing, if I was to go to the cave, it would be I'd be faced with my own apathy, my own stoic nature, and my own disconnection from any kind of passions. And I'd be probably pounding on the cave mirror to show me which direction to go. And my reflection would just shrug and walk away.
Oh. Okay, good serious and joke answer. I'm laughing so I don't cry. But it's very good. Very, very honest. And, thanks, man. Quite an image of Mirror Ken shrugging, going, that's what I got. I don't know for myself how much the mirror cave would explicitly show me, but maybe I can be inspired by you combining your answers into one. I think for me, the part of Star Wars that really, one of the many that resonates with me, is acting in anger without realizing that you're acting in anger, because if you didn't, you would have to honestly face something you fear. And I think when I trace back to choices that I've made that I wish I hadn't made, or moments I've lashed out, it's always because something is dancing close to something I'm afraid of, and that anger helps me cover up the fear. So I think the cave would try to find some way of making me face that. And maybe what that would turn into is, I would see myself not taking action when I should, not being responsible for myself. And that would turn into just thousands and thousands of mirror versions of me eating frozen pizza angrily.
Angry frozen pizza.
That's what I will face in the cave. That's the dark side. Our dark side versions are podcasting somewhere with shrugs and frozen pizza and just not caring.
Shrugs and frozen pizza. That's a new show on Apple.
That is right. So that is the end of my questions. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, just thank you for taking us through it. I think it's such a wonderful, important scene to the sequel trilogy. And in many ways serves as almost a classic midpoint for Rey's story and overall 7, 8, 9. And I love it. And I'm so happy the fans, it was close. We had some other close options we'll probably get to, but I'm happy to launch Force Center scene by scene with this deep sequence.
Yeah. And we will definitely discuss more, but this was a really fun one. I think it is a really great scene with a lot of depth. I think it is one that does change over time, from our first viewing of Last Jedi to subsequent, to then it changes again, being informed by Rise of Skywalker. So it was really, really fun to examine with you, Ken. So want to wrap up here with all our plugs. We got on Twitter, of course, you can find us at Force Center Pod. On Facebook, you can find us at Force Center Podcast. The podcast is available many places, of course, on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn. Our merch is at ftpublic.com/user/forcecenter. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/forcecenter and be a part of our Discord discussion channel and polls like the one we did there for this scene by scene. Any other plugs I'm forgetting for Forcecenter, Ken?
That is our massive amount of plugs.
It's plenty, right? So yeah. where can people find you, Ken?
Hey, you can go to kennapsock.com. I also want to highlight it as Pride Month. And on my website, we have a charity spotlight tab. If you go there, I'm supporting Maggie's Pride Project, which is, Maddie's Pride Project. I have two. My cousin has two wonderful daughters, and Maddie is launching this Maddie's Pride Project. And yet you can purchase some original handcrafted theme park ears. and $10 of every purchase goes directly to the Trevor Project. So that's highlighted on my website. Go to kennapsock.com, hit the charity tab, and I'll take you there.
Great. I think that's awesome. Awesome highlight to charity to highlight. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram is at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can check out my website for comedy albums and my other podcast, Obsessed, and all sorts of stuff like that. That is on josephscrimshaw.com. And that is it for us for this first standalone deep dive episode. We are going to go look inside the mirror caves of our soul.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.